Welcome, everybody, to the Big Book Roundtable of the RICO 12 family of recovery resources targeted all sorts of people all over the place for all sorts of reasons, dealing with addictions of all varieties. RICO 12 is also a resource for the loved ones of addicts, all the Anons out there. I'm Justin B., a child of an all-powerful and all-loving God and a multidisciplinary addict living in the miraculous recovery promised in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm joined here today again, after a couple of weeks away, by David G. and Nikki M. The three of us are striving to live the miracle of recovery one day at a time. And why don't you jump in and talk to us just a little bit? Introduce yourself, David, and then we'll go to Nikki.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. David G. I'm an alcoholic addict. Very grateful to be here today. Justin and Nikki, thank you so much for your service as always. Always, always pleasure to be here on RICO 12. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Nikki, you're up.
Well, hi, everybody out there in with internet land, and to my guys sitting across from me, I'm Nikki M., and I am not a saint. I just practice progression, never perfection. And I'm grateful to be at this table with two other non-saints also. We're going to have a good time today, people.
Awesome. Thank you, Nikki. And I don't know if you caught the little pun I said there, Europe. You just got back from Europe. Glad you're back and glad you had it sounds like you had a decent time. So happy for that. All right. We're going to get back into reading the chapter, There Is a Solution, and reading a little bit there and then diving into it, going into some history, going into some personal experience, strength, and hope, getting some insights from this. So everybody out there, grab your big book, grab a pen, highlighter, marker, paper, whatever you need to take notes, and take the things you take out of here and put it into action in your lives. We're going to start on page 22, middle of the page, this by no means, and we'll read through page 23. Towards the bottom of the page, they are down for the count. So here we go into the readings. This by no means is a comprehensive picture of the true alcoholic, as our behavior patterns vary, but this description should identify him roughly. And that's going back to what we read the previous time about the different types of alcoholics. Why does he behave like this? If hundreds of experiences have shown him that one drink means another debacle with all its attendant suffering and humiliation, why is it he takes that one drink? Why can't he stay on the water wagon? What has become of the common sense and willpower that he still sometimes displays with respect to other matters? Perhaps there never will be a full answer to these questions. Opinions vary considerably as to why the alcoholic reacts differently from normal people. We are not sure why, once a certain point is reached, little can be done for him. We cannot answer the riddle. We know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, as he may do for months or years, he reacts much like other men. We are equally positive that once he takes any alcohol whatever into his system, that something happens, both in the bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. The experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. These observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. If you ask him why he started on that last bender, the chances are he will offer you any one of 100 alibis. Sometimes these excuses have a certain plausibility, but none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc an alcoholic's drinking bout creates. They sound like the philosophy of the man who, having a headache, beats himself on the head with a hammer so that he can't feel the ache. If you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of an alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritated and refuse to talk. Once in a while, he may tell the truth, and the truth, strange to say, is usually that he has no more idea why he took that first drink than you have. Some drinkers have excuses with which they are satisfied part of the time, but in their hearts, they really do not know why they do it. Once this malady has a real hold, they are a baffled lot. There is the obsession that somehow, someday, they will beat the game, but they often suspect they are down for the count. And there's a lot in there. We're going through a lot of this, but David, talk to us a little bit about some of the things that jump out at you, maybe some history behind it and your own experience, strength, and hope from what we just read.
Absolutely. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Nikki, for being here today. Man, I just love this part of the book, everybody. We've been hammering home page after page after page after page this allergy that we've talked about here. What happens to us once we put it within the body, whatever that may be? And as Nikki always says, even with your thinking, if you take action based on a thought, you usually create a reality. If I'm doing that from an untreated state of mind, I'm going to have an unhealthy experience. And really, that's what he's saying here. You know, this is by no means a comprehensive picture talking about the prior three that we looked at. But this will identify him roughly. But I think here's the most important question. It doesn't say, why does he drink like this? Why is he drug like this? Why is he lust like? Why does he behave like this? And this is something that we're really going to start diving into now. We want to look at the cause, not the effect. If I trigger the allergy and I fall out in lust, drinking, drugs, food, gambling, whatever it may be, well, that had to come from a prior thought. But the question becomes, why do I behave like this? So if hundreds of experiences have showed me that one drink, not a few, not a couple here and there, but one means another debacle with its attendant suffering and humiliation, why the hell do I do it? What's become of my common sense and willpower? And I love this word that I still sometimes, not always, but sometimes display with respect to other answers. This is powerful. Powerful information, guys, because we're going to hammer it home right here on this allergy. And then we're not going to talk about it anymore. We're going to talk about the real problem, the mind. Bottom of 22. We know that while the alcoholic, whatever, keeps away from drink or whatever as he may do for months or years, he reacts much like other men. Not exactly, but much. But this is so important for here, for me. We are equally positive that key word here, once I take whatever it is into my system, something happens. And I need to stop right here and reflect on my experience. Is that true for me? Once I put whatever it is into my system, does something happen? Both in the bodily and mentally sense, which makes it virtually impossible for me to stop. So he says, and Justin read this, these observations would be academic and pointless. In other words, everything that we have observed in these prior 22 pages when it comes to this physical allergy would be, one, academic, which is good to know. Two, it's pointless. It ain't going to keep me sober. If I don't want to, if I want to recover from drinking, I just need to not drink. If I want to recover from drugging and lusting and whatever it else, I just need not do that. That's pointless information for me to know now. But if I want to get to the cause, then I'm going to have to look at where it's at. Therefore, the main problem the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. And if you ask him why he started on that last bender, chances are he'll offer you one of 100 alibis. Why? Because the book says, hell, we don't know why. Because I'm suffering from a system of thought that isn't going to let me know why. It's going to keep me running around in circles, making me think alcohol is the problem, drugs is the problem, lust is the problem, this is the problem. Just get rid of that and it'll be okay. I get rid of that and hell, I'm not okay. I still got a hole on the inside of me and I can't fill it up with nothing. I've tried everything except one thing. And we're about to see what that is. And so it says, it sounds like the philosophy of a man beating himself in the head with a hammer so he didn't feel the ache. Hell, that'd be crazy, wouldn't it? Well, that's kind of how we are. And so I love what it says. Once in a while, he may tell the truth, and truth, strange to say, is he usually has no more idea why he did it than you have. And I had people ask me that all the time. David, why in the hell you get out of prison for killing a man and you're out there on the streets drinking and beating up people? I mean, why the hell do you do that? And, you know, I'd come up with some cocky answer. Well, you know, they gave me some shit or some problems or whatever. That's why. That's not why. There's one word that Justin read here in this paragraph, and this is what we deal with moving forward, and it's the obsession. Because it says in our hearts, we really don't know why we do it. Hell, I don't know any more than you do. but I do know today. And it says, once this malady has a real hold, we're a baffled lot, even sober. There's the obsession. There it is. We've talked about the allergy for 22 pages now. Now we're going to look at the real problem. What happens in the mind prior to taking the drink? What sets me up for relapse? That's what I need to know. It says, you know, somehow, someday we'll beat the game. That's my great thought. But I often suspect I'm down for the count because I usually am at that point. I ever got is bigger than all of this. And we're going to see what this experience is coming up. I love this chapter. There is so much here. God, there's so much here. And I'm so excited to hear Nikki share her experience, strength, and hope on this. So I'm going to pass it over to her. Thank you so much, Justin. Thank you for calling on me, bud.
Yeah, thank you, David. And I've got a good question for you when we get to that point based on what you shared here. Nikki, why don't you share a little bit of your experience, strength, and hope based on that reading?
I will. And thank you, David. It's always great to hear from you. Our behavior patterns vary. I love that. And that's why I'm always like, don't look at me, look up or look at the book. I'm looking right now at not only do our behavior patterns vary, I'm looking at two men across the table from me from this virtual round table. Not only do our behavior patterns vary, everything varies. You know, David's addiction looks way different than mine. Justin, your addiction looks way different than mine. And I love that because this is a design for living. So if I remember that our behavior, well, you do that, you know, I do this. It centers in my mind, as we're going to read in a second, as we just talked about. And it says, why do I behave like this in the next one? Why does Nikki behave like this? And I love this. It's like, it will never fully be answered. And why? Well, I know why. Because further in my book, I don't know this at this point on page 22, but it says, this is why any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Any life run on self-will can hardly be a success, says our book on page 60. And that's true. So I don't know why. And on page 117, it says, we urge you to try our program. See, I need to be reprogrammed here because one thought, David says it, I go deep here. One thought leads me to suffering and humiliation. You know, I can just think my way into craziness. And this will never fully be answered. No one can answer this riddle. Why? Because this is God's blueprint for life, everybody. Remember, I'm going to make a decision soon that I'm going to be very less and less interested in my own little plans and designs. How about this one? How about less and less interested in my mother's plans and designs, Justin, in your family's plans and designs? Like, this is not easy. This is not easy. And I love page 417 when it says, when I complain about you or I complain about me, I'm complaining about God's handiwork. And that means I'm thinking I know better than God. And that makes me real arrogant, you guys, real arrogant. And so I love this part where it says, it's virtually impossible for Nikki to stop once this thought, because I know people dying on fear. I watched it during COVID, people dying on fear. One thought took them deep into this body and mental reaction. Paralyzed, stress-induced anxiety. I had that when my daughter left for university. I can't stop once I start. And my line out says, yeah, this is my experience. And I love, this is why I go deep on the mind, because it centers in my mind. It doesn't, hey, sex and love addicts, it doesn't center in his pants or his bank account that I thought it did. I'm a retired burlesque entertainer. Everything was, it's my bank account's not big enough, you know? So, and of course it says right here, hundreds of alibis, excuses. See, I like to tell, and you know, if you come to Noodle with Nikki, I'm always like, you can bring your big book or you can bring your big book of excuses. Now, my big book of excuses is so big, I can't even carry it because I like to justify, rationalize, and explain things. And my friend, Bob Darrell, Bob D, everybody, you should listen to some of his tapes. He says, and he doesn't know he's my friend. He says, if you have to justify, rationalize, or explain anything, know you are wrong, because you never have to justify, rationalize, or explain what is right. You know, and then I love here where it says, I refuse to talk. Well, I'm not going to talk to you when you're criticizing. I'm driven by 100 forms of self-delusion. I'm not like that. It's your fault. Hey, Al-Anons, isn't it? It's your fault. If you'd only get better, I'd be okay, says the Anon. Okay, so, and then once in a while, I may tell the truth. And these excuses, these lies, you know, and it really has a hold on me because I love this. We're the obsession and, you know, and hey, I have a new obsession. It's called the obsession of gratitude. It's called the obsession of being helpful. And it's called the obsession of being love and tolerance, which I never do perfectly. So, and I love this where it says, somehow, someday, above there, I wrote, insanity. They, Nikki, will beat the game. What game? Outsmarting God and God's blueprint for my life? It's not comedy hour right now, I know. But that's my experience, strength, and hope on this. This book says in a little bit, like, I'm going to be rocketed into another dimension. Let me just go back to real quick about it centering in my mind. If it centers in my mind, I'm going to make the solution real big in my mind too. I am rocketed into another dimension. I'm speaking things, you guys, and it's happening. Real quick experience, strength, and hope. I said I wanted to get upgraded. You know, I love to try and get upgraded on the plane. Oh yeah, this time, not the bed, but I did get the upgrade, the aisle seat. Like, cause I thanked God. I had the obsession of gratitude to thank God even before my flight. Thank you, God, for upgrading me and getting me that aisle seat that I need. I'd like to be close to the bathroom. I'm 50. I love you guys. Thank you.
And thank you, Nikki. I've got a question for you too here in a minute, but I want to go back to something David talked about here. You know, actually, this is based on a fairly recent instance that I had in my own working with a sponsee of mine. And I'd like to get your take on this, David. So when a sponsee of yours relapses, what does that conversation look like for you when they can't answer why? Hey, what happened? What led up to this? What's going on? Oh, I have no idea. Kind of like what we read here. So talk to me about how that conversation looks like with you.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times I don't ask why because I already know. They, you know, if we're practicing steps 10 and 11 and we're reading through the book and I see them begin to relax on 10 and 11, doing nightly reviews, doing daily check-ins, different things like that, missing appointments, you know, then I already know, you know, what's going on, but they don't know. And so we usually bring it to mind that how the mind will always rebuild itself and come back and trick us into relapse, you know. I think that what we read there in our hearts, we really don't know why we do it. And I think the reason is because it's not me doing it. Now, I'm taking actions based on the thoughts that are given me, but I promise you, I'm not drawing up them thoughts. I didn't wake up in the morning and say, hey, I think I'll ruin my family, tear down my group, trash, you know, my spiritual life, you know, my connection with God. I just didn't think through the day. Thoughts came up. And by not practicing steps 10 and 11, I was not prepared for those. And when those showed up, I had no defense against it. I took action based on those thoughts, and it created a reality which caused relapse. And that happened over and over and over. So I already know what the answer to that is. And that's why I start guys in steps 10, 11 from the beginning, because that gives them something to hold on to as we work through this book. I've seen it work more than I've seen it not work. And, you know, there's a lot of people that disapprove of that. I don't really care. You know, I've watched over 30 men and a few women recover from what's outlined in this book. So I'm not going to do that, stop doing that to appease anyone. So I don't know if that answers your question, Justin, but for me, I usually have this conversation based on what's in the doctor's opinion. It's imperative that a man's brain be clear before he's approached, as then he has a better chance of understanding, accepting what we have to offer. So I tell him, you're going to have to get a corral around that beast. You're going to have to get some days away. And what we'll do at that point, after you get some days away, make a lot of meetings, stay with 10 and 11, stay in contact with me. And when you get to that point, we're going to come back and we're going to do a quick upgrade through the book again, back up to where you're at. I'm not going to read the book sentence for sentence again with you. But at that point, we're going to pick up and we're going to go again. And but I always, always tell them, you've got to be watching for self, because if you're not in step 10, it'll come back and get you, and you won't even know it's happening in your heart. You won't know again why it happened. So that's kind of what my conversation looks like. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, David. I appreciate that. Yeah. And that's very helpful for me as I do that. I appreciate that perspective in there. Nikki, question I have for you is, you know, when I, and I'll say we, and I'll just speak for addicts in general, when we come into the rooms for the first time, we're sure that the problem is either a physical thing or, you know, in my case, it's like a holiness thing, a moral thing, a lack of being godly or religious enough. And do you remember the time when either you or maybe a sponsee had that light click on that, hey, this is the problem centers in my mind. It's not necessarily my body. Yes, I have a body issue. Yes, I've got a spiritual issue, but it centers in my mind. Can you think of a time when that light clicked on?
When I was sponsoring. I mean, this is all about sponsor. It's about a full 12-step program because I have a wonderful sponsor who takes you through the big book. And, you know, that's why we're here. And it says I think it's on page 60. God, where is it? I got to find it. I think it's on 62. It says, many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we couldn't live up to them even if we would have liked to. I had a lot of moral and philosophical convictions galore. I had so many. I can tell you, like, and it's not enough to live up to them. And so I saw that in my sponsees. And then I had a sponsee who was on here one time, Sarah B., and she had no, like, she really didn't have any addictions. I was baffled. It wasn't like nothing was really, you know, there was nothing I could pinpoint because we're like, is it a certain person? Is it this? It was her thinking. And that's when I went through the big book, because sponsoring and getting to be armed with the facts of not only yourself, of other people. Page 112 says, read this book, or at least a chapter on alcoholism. And I've read this book, so I'm armed with the facts. And I was baffled, like, how am I going to help this girl? And I just went through and it's God. This is what I'm talking about. Intuitive thought and inspiration came to me because I'm here working a 12-step, not an 11-step program. And I went through my big book with her, crossing out the DR and writing a TH over it. To think is to die. My thinking will kill me, not my drinking. Because she didn't drink. I mean, she came, of course, the disease of alcoholism addiction affects everyone. And I just took her line and my brains exploded. And then that's when I went deep. And I knew, and then I know the book, this centers in my mind. And so it says it right here. It doesn't, and I just kept going deeper and deeper. See, it says, God will, more will be disclosed. More will be disclosed. And this is why you do not leave the rooms. You know, the day our brains exploded when David was like in his accent and he said, stay. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah. Don't keep coming back. Stay. And that is, I mean, that's how you're ending our sessions lately. Not always, but a lot of the time. And so I'm just, I think if, and that's what I do a lot of the time, because I do sponsor people who are stone cold sober in the rooms 20 years and they want to die from their thinking. And not on my watch. Thank you guys. I love you so much.
And thank you, Nikki. Yeah. I so appreciate the perspective you bring into this, Nikki, where your focus right now is on those who are stone cold sober but dying. And that's a perspective that you know, you said with your sponsee who you realize, hey, this is thinking. It's not necessarily drinking, for especially for that one person. Very good. So what I'd like to do now is just kind of do some takeaways from this. So from what we've discussed, what we've read, what is one takeaway that you would like to pull out of this, David, and maybe pass on that information to the world?
Well, I think, you know, what we've looked at the bottom of page 22, you know, is so important to take away and to pass along as well, that we're equally positive that once, keyword, once we take whatever it is into our system, something happens and it's going to be virtually impossible for us to stop. But the good news is, if we never put it in the body, then we never suffer those reactions. So what I take away from this, watch the mind. watchful, be watchful, be watchful. I can't say that enough. It was stressed to me, you have to watch. And even when you're watching sometimes, you know, the damn thief will dress up as a policeman and come back to get you. Even when you're watching, I know it's happened. So, you know, I don't know. The takeaway for me is there is a solution here, and it is in this book. And if we follow it to the letter, we will have an experience that will overcome self thinking, whatever that is, you know, I mean, all of that, we can recover from this. So thank you, Justin.
Thanks, David. Nikki, how about you? What's a takeaway that you'd like to share about?
The word behave. I didn't have that circled. It didn't stand out until, of course, David in that fabulous accent said behave. And I circled it, squared it, and started because I already know it's in my mind, but my mind makes me behave a certain way. It's just how that my mind controls my hand movement, my eyelash, you know, my smile, my mind. And so it makes me behave. This is everybody. This is radical mindfulness. And the three of us, we read other books. And one of our books, I know you both read it. It says, God didn't create me with a spirit of fear. I was created with a spirit, and I was just trying to think of the verse, but you probably know it. And I'm created with the spirit of power, love, truth, not with this sick thinking that, you know, it says my twisted thinking. So I'm really going to watch my thoughts, because it is a key word on step 10. We got to watch. I want to watch my thoughts so I don't behave like a lunatic. Thank you, boys, men, children of God.
Thank you, Nikki. My takeaway comes from the sentence that reads, if you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of an alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritated and refuse to talk. You know, I've really got to analyze myself and make sure that I'm being open with others so that they can help me see. It takes two to see one. And I help me see that, because oftentimes when I find myself laughing it off or becoming irritated when somebody brings something to my attention, or if I refuse to talk, I turn on the silent, give the silent treatment. Or if I point the finger at the other person, say, nope, it's your fault or somebody else's fault. Here's where I'm dying right now. It's daylight savings time's fault. I'm an emotional wreck and it's messing me up, and I'm pointing the finger at something I have zero control over. I've got to look at that and say, okay, where is the alcoholic thinking coming in here and making me think I need to do that? Anyways, that is my takeaway from this. Thank you so much, both Nikki and David, for this conversation on this. It's been very helpful for me, and I hope very helpful for all of you out there. If any of you feel prodded to do so, please consider donating to RICO 12 and helping us forward this this project out to more and more people. You can do that by going to rico12.com/support or checking the show notes of this podcast. And if you'd like to see what David and Nikki are doing in their recovery work, check out the links in the podcast there too. Keep coming back, everybody. Sit down, come all the way in, sit all the way down, stay, and join us in this fellowship of the Spirit as we trudge this adventurous and amazing and happy road of destiny. Work it. You are worth it.